This is the Pet Podcast on pets.ca, episode number 38, Small Dog Diseases, for April 30, 2008. Hey there, pet lovers. How's it going? And welcome to the 38th Pet Podcast on pets.ca. My name is Marco, and as always, we're coming to you from Montreal, Quebec, Canada. For today's show, we have another interview going with Dr. Lee, and today we're going to discuss diseases that small dogs get, or, you know, sickness and or disease particular to small dogs. As small dogs become more and more popular, thanks so much, Paris Hilton, people are noticing, different problems that they may have with certain breeds of their small dog, and we're going to talk to Dr. Lee about that shortly. But before we get into it, I'd like to thank some people for recent comments on the blog. I'd like to thank Mary, Christina, Adriana, Amazed, and Richard for leaving quite a few comments on the blog with regard to posts that we've made on the blog or just commenting on the podcasts. Thanks so much. We totally appreciate comments. And as always, you can leave them via the blog. Just make your way to our blog, www.pets.ca/blog. You can send suggestions or comments by email, pets.ca@gmail.com. Or of course, you can just make your way to the forums on pets.ca, where you can talk about anything you want, including, suggestions on this podcast or comments for podcasts or anything else. Our forum is very, very, very active. It's totally free, and we encourage new people to join up all the time. The podcasts are free, of course, as well, and the best way to get them is by subscribing for free. Just click on the little link on the front page of our blog, pets.ca/blog, and if you click the link that says subscribe in iTunes, and you have iTunes on your computer, which you can download for free at itunes.com, then every time we put one of these things out, you'll get it automatically. You can also use something like Google Reader or any other podcatcher of choice. So without further ado, let's get right into the podcast now. So I'd like to welcome back Dr. Lee back to the show. It's been a while since we've heard from him, but as always, we're happy to get the benefit of his experience. So welcome back to the show, Dr. Lee.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Always a pleasure. So for today's show, we thought we would talk about health problems in small dogs. And, a lot of times people get small dogs and they may not necessarily get the attention that bigger dogs get, but they do have particular health problems to them. And I thought maybe we could just talk about that a little bit. So, you know, when we talk about that issue, Dr. Lee, health problems in small dogs, what's one of the first things that come to your mind?
There's a variety of some orthopedic problems that small dogs seem to be born with that cause quite a bit of problems.
What problems are we talking about?
Probably the most common that we hear about is what's called medial luxating patella, which all that means is medials on the inside, luxating means that it's popping in and out, and patella is going to be the kneecap. So it's a kneecap that pops in on the inside. But it is a big deal. It is very uncomfortable. There's many small dogs that live with this their whole life. Because of the fact that they're so small, it does not cause the clinical signs of lameness that we see with larger dogs. It is a very uncomfortable process, whether you're a big dog or a small dog, and you can see a very clear, visible difference of how the dog walks and it behaves and its ability to jump after surgery than before. But it doesn't have, sometimes it does not have the traditional type of lameness that we would see with the same condition on a larger dog. So a lot of times it gets left behind.
Okay, but this is something that a pet owner is going to notice, right? I mean, their dog will walk funny. They are going to notice it.
Not always.
Not always.
Not always. I do have a lot of clients that come in and they think that to the professional, yes, the dog does not look normal. There may be a little bowing to the stance. Commonly, they don't jump up. I have had a couple clients that after the surgery, they came back and were a little bit upset, saying, I always thought that my dog was very well behaved. I never knew that it couldn't jump up. And what had happened was the dog was not jumping up on the couch because it was painful. It was walking around fine, going on walks fine, but it was too painful to even jump up on a couch to be next to its owner. The moment the surgery was done, dogs won't stay off the couch.
So it is something that pet owners may not notice. There might be no signs to a pet owner that's not looking. How would they know it's a problem then, or a potential problem?
It's something that would be picked up on a routine exam. And there's a grading as well. We grade the disease from a 1 to a 4. And so it's something that, depending on the grading and the patient, you know, many times the owners do notice it. I do have a lot of clients that will come in and say, oh, you know, my dog, for some reason, will all of a sudden limp on its back left leg, and then it's back to normal again. That's a very common thing that we see. The other thing that where clients will notice it is that when your kneecap is popped out of place, your ACL or cruciate ligament is at higher risk for tearing. And so a lot of times what will happen is I'll get a middle-aged, young, active, small dog come in for back leg lameness, and now not only do they have the kneecap issue, but they also have a torn cruciate. And so now the surgery becomes a lot more expensive.
Very good to know. And I guess just for those people wondering how often this occurs, well, I don't know, 1% of small dogs you see, 5%, 10%, is there any rough figure you have? Just based on your own experience, like how often you see it, maybe even once a week, once a month.
Oh, I would say that with small dogs, I will catch a dog that has it daily.
Oh, really?
It's very common. And there's certain breeds, Pomeranians, Chihuahuas, Yorkshire Terriers. Those are much more common breeds that we'll see. There's some other smaller dogs that I don't see it very often. Corgis, you know, I don't see it very often.
But like you say, like, you know, Yorkies are popular, Pomeranians are popular. It is presenting itself in loads of smaller dogs.
Absolutely.
Okay, so definitely, you know, our listeners need to be aware of that if they have a small dog or are thinking about getting a small dog as well.
Right, and this is, if you were thinking of getting a small dog and if you were planning on breeding, this is a hereditary problem. Dogs that have this problem should not be bred.
Of course. And if you're thinking about a particular breed, you know, and like you say, it's part of their genetic makeup for that breed, or it happens often within that breed, and you do your research beforehand, I mean, you know, as always, when you do research, it may or may not help you make a decision on, you know, whether, you know, I want a particular breed that may likely have more health problems than another breed. So, again,
right.
I'm sorry, please go.
This particular problem can also be certified against. If your dog, if someone is breeding these dogs, they can have their vet OFA certify those knees. And so when you're looking to buy a specific breed, you can ask, are the parents both certified on their knees? If that's the case, you're, you know, unlikely to have a problem with your pet's knees.
Good to know. So what would come next on the list, Dr. Lee?
There's a disease called leg Perthes disease. What happens, this is something that happens in toy breeds or terriers, usually 5 to 8 months of age, but what will be seen is a acute onset of a back hind, of a rear lameness. And the hip joint is a ball and socket, and the blood supply to the ball portion of the joint dies off and stops. And so the ball of the joint just degenerates for reasons unknown. It is a hereditary condition for, again, we don't really know why, but the blood supply to this ball stops somewhere between 5 months to 8 months and sometimes up to a year.
And what breeds of small dog do you notice this in? Is it particular to specific breeds?
Terriers, toy breeds.
Okay. And moving on, what would come next, Dr. Lee?
Surprisingly, hip dysplasia is something that I see very commonly in small dogs.
And that is surprising, actually, I think, because the second people hear about hip dysplasia, I think, and myself included, I'm always thinking about larger dogs, you know, big dogs, Dobermans, Rottweilers, things like that. But yet, it occurs fairly frequently in small dogs?
I see it as a very common finding on x-rays. But again, it's rarely because we're looking for it. Usually we're taking the x-rays for other reasons. And we'll notice that the dog does have, you know, severe, moderate to severe arthritis of the hip joint. It's something that's common, but because the animal is smaller and small dog lameness does not show up in the same way, in the same severity or the obvious clinical signs of a large dog, a lot of these dogs are just living with this discomfort. Same thing with just general arthritis. I think that that would be the other thing I see in small, older patients. We'll take x-rays and we'll see arthritis of the elbow, the shoulders, the spine, just like all other dogs. But when I talk to the owners, you know, maybe they're seeing a overall decrease in activity, but it's being attributed to the dog being older, whereas with a larger dog, sometimes those signs are attributed to actual arthritis. But whether you're, you know, 2 pounds or 200 pounds, if you have arthritis, it's painful, and there's a lot of things that we can do to help these guys out.
And in terms of hip dysplasia, can you give us just a 10-second definition for those that don't know what it is?
Dysplasia means improper growth, so it's where the hip joint is not formed properly. It's a ball and socket joint. Typically, the socket is not either angled correctly or deep enough, and so the ball kind of starts to slip in and out, and you get this small popping that occurs as they walk, and that leads to inflammation of the joint, which is arthritis.
And in terms of treatment for it, is it any easier to treat a smaller dog with hip dysplasia than a bigger dog with hip dysplasia?
It can be. I mean, a lot of times it's going to be cheaper as the medication is going to be less. You're going to be using smaller amounts.
And moving on, of course we know with small dogs, especially small dogs like those cute little pug dogs, they have those squished up faces. There are problems related with that type of face as well. Isn't that true, Dr. Lee?
Yes, there is. A lot of times we see with these dogs this little smushed face where they have some problems breathing. And so many times this is just assumed that this is a normal part of the breed. We'll have the Boston Terriers, the Bulldogs, the Pugs that, you know, they have this kind of this snarfly sound, heavy snoring, and it's just kind of seen as being a key part of the breed. But in a lot of these dogs, it can lead to some very serious problems and is a very serious health risk because they're not able to get that air in. They have normal lung capacity, but they can't get the air through their face and mouth. With the dogs that have the severe problems, what we'll see is a lot of times their nose, they won't have normal nose holes. It will be very small, so instead of having two little nice discrete holes, there'll be little tiny little slits, if even that. The other thing which will be seen, if that's there, and can only be seen by your veterinarian, is elongation of the soft palate. And that is something that the dog has to be sedated for and see the back of the throat. Where it will be clinically evident is that will make that snarfling sound a lot worse. So typically for the dogs that are having a lot of extra sounds on these smushed face dogs, they're the ones that should be evaluated because a lot of times they do have this elongation of the soft palate. What that leads to is when they have problems about the soft palate and or the nose, it's very hard for them to breathe air in. So they're constantly, it's like sucking through a straw, and they're creating this vacuum in the back of their throat. And they're constantly doing this sucking action. And again, the back of your throat was not meant to have this sucking action every time that you breathe. And so what will happen is that pressure is going to end up causing damage to the back of the throat. One of the things that a lot of small dogs will be diagnosed with later is something called collapsed trachea, and that can be secondary to this brachycephalic syndrome.
Okay. Are there surgical options available if this is a problem for your dog? How are owners of these small dogs going to be dealing with this problem?
Surgery is the only way to solve it, but it can be a very straightforward problem. I'm sorry, it can be a very straightforward surgery. And again, with laser, it's no sutures, outpatient procedure.
Okay, so although it may happen quite frequently, the surgical option is straightforward and fairly easy?
Straightforward, fairly easy. The surgery to correct the soft palate, you know, certainly you do need to have a surgeon that knows what they're doing and needs the right equipment. You can run into some problems with that. Also, without the laser, that becomes a bit more of a challenging surgery and may or may not require a specialist.
Okay, very good to know. And I guess just last a question on the topic. Of those dogs that are brachycephalic or have those flat, smushy faces, In your experience, how often are those problems going to occur where they may indeed need surgery?
If they have the problem, if they have what's called the stenotic nares or the elongated soft palate, they absolutely should have surgical correction.
Okay.
But not all dogs that have the smushed face and make the noises and the snoring, not all of them have it and require surgery. But if it is something that can be surgically fixed, it is better to surgically correct it than not, because they're going to be breathing a lot better.
Right. And if they were not going, and if for whatever reason a pet owner wouldn't do this, would this condition shorten the lifespan of the dog?
It can. Also, if they have other like respiratory diseases, let's say they have heart disease or some type of lung disease, being basically breathing out through a very small tube is going to make your ability to deal with that a lot harder. A lot of these brachycephalic breeds are known to do very poorly with heat stroke, heat exposure, overexertion, and a lot of it is going to be made worse by the situation. So it can lead to a lot of problems.
Okay, good to know. And lastly, I know that dogs also, or smaller dogs, they can also have some periodontal or dental problems or oral problems. I was wondering if you could go into that for a little bit as well.
Yes, a lot of the small breeds have worse dental disease. A lot of times it has been thought that it's because of canned food, but we know that there seems to be a genetic predisposition. And whether you're feeding soft food, dry food, special dental diets, a lot of these small breeds are just going to have worse dental disease. And one of the things that a lot of times we'll see is people will bring in, you know, big dogs, and if they have very bad dental disease, they may be more apt to get that expensive dental done than for small dogs like Pomeranians that are just known to have bad disease. It's just kind of attributed to, oh, got a small dog, they're going to have bad teeth and bad breath, and that's just the way that it is. And you know, we know that dental disease can cause so many other health issues, and it's very, very uncomfortable, that regardless of whether, you know, it's typical for the breed or not, it's still something that we can help these guys out with.
Okay. And in terms of, you know, helping the small dogs, does it just go to a regular oral hygiene, you know, hopefully teaching or brushing your pet's teeth by yourself every day? Or if you're not doing that, at least, you know, a tooth cleaning when the dog needs it? Are those going to be the major ways to combat this problem?
Yes, I think doing combination is the best. I mean, even with brushing, you're still going to need the dentals. But the brushing, the daily brushing, is going to put those dental cleanings farther apart and maybe avoid extractions, things like that. Also, dental diets, which can help out, but a lot of small dogs will not take the dental diet. So for that reason, one of the things I do like, if you're looking at store brand dog foods, is Eukanuba. They have a HMP crystal or hexametaphosphate crystal coating on all of their kibbles that becomes activated with saliva, and that helps reduce the formation of plaque on the teeth. A lot of the chew toys, like Kong toys, Nylabones, again, the problem is that a lot of the small dogs aren't necessarily the biggest chewers.
Right.
There's also a product called Orivet, which is an electrically charged wax polymer that, instead of doing a daily application like with brushing, it's a once-a-week application. You just need to get it inside of the mouth, and because the wax is electrically charged, it actually seeks out and bonds to the tooth, helps prevent any plaque from forming on, and any bacteria that it covers, it actually suffocates. So it helps out on a variety of levels. And then routine dental care with your veterinarian. So a combination of any one or all of those things can really help out with the dental problems.
Really good information. And just lastly on that topic, how often should pet owners be bringing their dogs in for dental cleaning?
Depends on the pet. I think that twice a year evaluations is the way to go. There are some patients that may need it once or twice in a lifetime. There are some that need it twice a year. And it really depends on the patient. And again, you know, what we're using to try to help combat this dental disease.
so much for that. So I guess, like, in conclusion, it does seem for some reason that there's like a double standard. People tend to be taking better health of their large dog, or they tend to be spending the cash when their large dog is sick over their small dog. You are seeing that, right? Is that kind of what you're suggesting, that often people are not?
It is something that we're seeing, and I don't think that it's a lack of, like, large dog owners take better care of their pets. I don't think that at all. In fact, I think that people are going to be equally willing to do whatever they need medically for their dog, be small or large. In fact, some of the diseases that are, like, very high maintenance type diseases like diabetes sometimes are easier compliance with the small dog owners. But I think that the reason where a lot of these get left behind is that we start to think of it as, oh, it's just part of having the small dog. They just have this issue. Or, yes, they have, you know, an orthopedic problem, but it doesn't seem to really stop them. You know, they're just a little bit slower. And so I don't think that it is recognized as, you know, this, it is a problem, and it, you know, we can make your pet increase their quality of life by doing some simple things.
Okay. And also, I guess, you know, also to be fair, I guess sometimes when there are problems, the symptoms are going to be more pronounced if the dog is larger than if the dog is smaller.
Correct. And that's going to happen on, you know, a variety of reason, you know, levels with the lameness. There just has to be a weight ratio. You know, the larger you are, that larger mass is going to make lameness much more clinically evident. Take a look at horses. That's a major factor of horse medicine. And while that has various reasons, part of the evidence of it is going to be the fact that the larger weight is going to make the lameness more clinical than, say, the mouse that has the broken foot that's still walking around on it. And then with things like periodontal disease, again, a lot of these small dogs, they may not be chewers, so we may not notice a change in their chewing activity. Whereas a big dog that's constantly chewing on rawhides that all of a sudden stops, that can be a little bit more clinically evident.
Makes total sense. So I think we'll leave it at that, Dr. Lee. We can hear dogs in the background again, and we know you're at work. And we thank you so much for your time. So really, thanks so much for doing this podcast, Dr. Lee. Appreciate it as always. And we hope to speak with you again in the very near future.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks as always, Dr. Lee. And so I'd like to thank Dr. Lee again for that great interview. Dr. Lee, as always, shares so much information, you know, with our visitors. He's also pretty active on our bulletin board. So if you make your way to the forums, you may in fact see Dr. Lee helping people out. Dr. Lee practices in Mesa, Arizona and Phoenix, Arizona, and has two animal hospitals there. So if you are looking for a secondary opinion or you need a primary vet, we can highly recommend Dr. Lee. And you can check out his own website at aachospitals.com. The actual link will be included in the show notes. So for this podcast, we really talked about, you know, the medical diseases and problems that small dogs can have. But small dogs can also have other issues, often behavioral. And again, similar to what we discussed in the podcast, whereby, you know, if a small dog has a behavioral problem, you know, likewise with a health problem, it may go less noticed than with a larger dog. But, you know, small dogs can have behavioral problems. They can be excessive barkers. You know, they can be afraid of children. You know, they have smaller bodies and they're more fragile. So they're not always suited to, like, busy families with small children and things like that. Small dogs may be suited to maybe older couples or couples without kids or doting couples that can dote on their little dogs. They tend to be lap dogs, and you just have to be really careful with them. As we mentioned at the beginning, it makes total sense to research every particular breed. You know, I just want to also mention that obedience training is very important for small dogs, and it's something that a lot of owners don't do. And then they wonder why they have behavioral problems. At the end of the day, all dogs need obedience training. All dogs need obedience training, and that includes the small dogs. So it's a really good idea to give them some group obedience training so they learn how to interact with other dogs while you're around. Of course, you can ask your veterinarian or a trainer or someone you know for a reference for a trainer if your dog does have some obedience problems. That's going to do it for me for today. We're probably going to be doing another podcast with Dr. Lee about larger dogs, health problems that are particular to larger dogs next time. But until we do, as always, please give your pets a serious hug. Give them kisses, give them pets, give them rubs. And as always, give them an extra little scratchy under the chin from Marco. Bye for now.